What's up, everyone? I'm Andrew Steinwald, and this is Zima Red. On this show, we speak with the users, founders, and creatives that are diving into the world of unique digital assets, also called non-fungible tokens. My guest today is Whale Shark. This is my second episode with Whale Shark, the first being a hot seat episode where I grilled him with questions about his upcoming project, the Whale Social Token. He passed that episode with flying colors, but we never had a chance to sit down and have a regular conversation. This is that episode. We get to learn about Whale Shark's background, his business interests, thoughts, and theses surrounding the NFT ecosystem, and of course, his social token, Whale. What I loved about our conversation is that Whale Shark speaks very directly and honestly about what he did to get where he is today. He discusses the details, strategies, and basically his entire playbook on how to go from an idea to a successful project. To sum it up, it's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, but Whale Shark proves that anyone can make it if they put in the work. Please enjoy my conversation with Whale Shark. Before jumping into today's episode, I want to briefly talk about our sponsor, Async Art. Async Art is a new art movement built on a blockchain. Users can create, collect, and trade programmable art. These digital paintings can be split into layers, which can affect the overall image of the art piece. The coolest thing about programmable art is that it evolves over time. The art piece itself can react and change to the outside environment. Have your art change based on stock prices or even things like the weather. Stay tuned for two exciting events happening on Async this month. First, we have the artist Micah Johnson changing a layer on one of his artworks titled Sovereignty. This layer change will reveal a Bitcoin QR code where users can donate Bitcoin to one of the children featured in the artwork. Next, we have the legendary artists Trevor Jones and A Lot of Money teaming up to release their ETH Boy piece. And there you have it, two exciting events coming from Async this month. Now back to the episode. Whale Shark, thank you so much for joining me today. Super excited to chat with you again. And for those of you who don't know, Whale Shark is actually my first guest to come on the podcast twice. He was on an episode a few months back called the Hot Seat Edition, which is basically where I grilled him on his new social token that he was launching. It is now fully launched, so I'm really excited to dive more into that. And our conversation today is going to focus just on general thoughts and his opinions on all things crypto. So Whale Shark, thank you so much for coming on today.
Andrew, it's a real pleasure. And thank you again for having me on, not only for the second time, but also as your first second time guest. Really enjoyed our first podcast together, had a lot of compliments from people, especially first coming on into the Whale project. And, you know, I felt with the growth of Whale in recent months, I'm just thrilled and honored to have this opportunity to speak to you about Whale again.
Awesome. So we touched upon this before, but I'd love to hear a little bit more. Can you tell us about your background?
Sure thing. So over time, I've begun to share a lot more information about myself. Just going into a rough summary, I'm actually born in the UK. A lot of people can't tell that about me from my accent, but I was actually educated in the US. So I spent quite a bit of time in the US. The bulk of my career prior to crypto was in management and brand consulting. So over the past 37 years, I've lived and worked in over 10 different countries, including the United States, several countries in Europe, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, China. And after that, in 2015, actually decided to start the road of an entrepreneur and started several companies, which I own and I run today. My first foray into crypto was in 2012, when I bought my very first Bitcoin. In 2015, sold all of my Bitcoin for Ethereum when I saw the value proposition of what a smart chain blockchain could do. And then after that, bought my first NFTs in 2019. Over the course of the last, 14 months, I've managed to use the capital to become one of the largest holders of NFTs in the space. And at the same time, in May of this year, launched the first NFT-backed social currency, Whale. Today, we have over 2,000 members in our Discord, and we own over 4,000 NFTs that are currently being held in community possession at the moment.
It's amazing. All right, so we're going to definitely dive deeper into social tokens and obviously Whale and NFTs. But besides NFTs and social tokens, what do you currently find interesting in the crypto space?
So a lot of people know me from the NFT space because I think that was really the first time that I came out as an investor, as a social entrepreneur. It was also actually the first time I registered a Twitter account, mainly to keep up and to communicate with artists as I was collecting their works. Actually, the Twitter account that you see for Whale Shark has only been around for, about 14 months now. So since I've been in the industry since 2012, I have a huge interest in cryptocurrencies. While I don't hold any Bitcoin anymore today, I do continue to hold several altcoins, which I find to be very promising. My predominant holdings today are mainly in Ethereum, Tezos, as well as ERC-20 tokens such as Uni and some other projects that I find promising. What I also find very interesting about the crypto space is the DeFi application that has developed within the space. My first exposure to DeFi was actually an investment into Bitfinex, as well as the subsequent growth of Ffinex, now known as Diversify. So that's something that I'm heavily involved in. And in addition to that, Baking with Tezos, as well as all of the recent DeFi revolution that's going on within the space, my predominant interest is in AMMs or like Uniswap. And so I'm also a large holder of Uni as they continue to grow into what I believe will be the world's largest exchange.
Wow, that's a super bold statement. I really like that. So if I could ask you a little bit more about that, why do you think that Uni will become potentially the world's largest exchange?
So the first thing is that having come from centralized exchanges, you know, I've been through so many of them. Honestly, the processes for KYC and AML have very often been not only troublesome, have also not been accurate. So it's been very difficult sometimes for me to go through the process of registering for a centralized exchange. In addition to that, the thing that interests me most about Uniswap is the use of liquidity pooling versus order books. So when you look at order books on exchanges, you know, you have an order book where you can have fake buy and fake sell orders that create a certain dynamic. Whereas when you look at Uniswap and they're using liquidity pools, essentially, the buy and sell orders are happening simultaneously, which really appeals to me, which means that it would be more difficult to manipulate the market on a AMM versus a centralized exchange. So I guess there are several reasons why I'm very bullish on Uniswap. The first thing is due to the ease of use, right? Anyone with a MetaMask wallet can just hop on and with some Ethereum be able to invest in any of the ERC-20 tokens that they have in there. Someone was actually just pointing me to WBTC, which I was also taking a look at earlier today, which is amazing. So ease of use is one. And I guess the second thing again is talking about that market manipulation. I strongly do believe that AMMs do have more of the exchange part rather than the trade part done correctly. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of what they're doing.
Yeah, it's almost like regular centralized exchanges, they're constrained by geography and regulations and stuff like that because you have Binance and then you have Binance US. And then if you look at something like Uniswap, its geographic location is like the internet. So there really are no constraints. And if you just look at the population of the internet compared to the population of any country, then obviously it looks like Uniswap is well positioned to really explode over the coming years.
Andrew, you're absolutely correct. And honestly, I applied for a Binance account, I think about a year ago, provided all of the relevant information, still don't have my account today.
No way. So, that is crazy. That's crazy.
You know, wow. So it's not about avoiding KYC and AML. You know, I truly do believe in positive regulation. It's just the inefficiencies that those sort of processes bring, even to very valid investors like myself, right? You know, but given that, while AMMs might continue to grow, I mean, there's also a pitfall, right? Because basically, as long as you have two different types of currencies or two different types of cryptos, you're able to build a pool. And then after that, you're able to put this as a potential buy sell proposition to anyone on the platform. So I think currently centralized exchanges, they do play a very strong role in curating what should be sold and what should not. But at the same time, when you have a platform that is so open that anyone can sell anything for anything, I think due diligence is even more important. Even, and sorry for this small shot, but even given that Binance listed sushi, right?
Right. Yeah, no, it's almost like curation matters a lot in unfettered markets, right? There needs to be someone who kind of knows the lay of the land, so to speak, and can kind of guide people. Because if you're brand new and you go into these markets, like you don't really know what is going on, right? There's sushi, there's like sake now, you know, so it's like, it's confusing.
Dude, I think we have the entire dinner table.
Yeah, we definitely do. All right, so can you tell me what social tokens are? And I don't even know if you call them social tokens because they're called social tokens, social currencies. Like, yeah, I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure, Andrew, you're absolutely right. I think there's different names for what people call these. I mean, some social tokens, social currencies, personal tokens. Basically, I think they all revolve around one same concept. And that is basically an individual or a community tokenizing a certain aspect of their life and monetizing that through fundraising, or in Whale's case, just giving it away, right? I mean, there are several examples. I mean, recently we've seen the growth of personal tokens, like from Alex, coin artist, who in Alex's standpoint, he's taken 3 years of his future revenue and he's tokenized that and fundraised it for people who are interested in his personal and professional growth. With coin artist, once again, tokenizing herself, but also having applications of that coin towards her upcoming game. I think there are many different ways that people can tokenize themselves. In Whale's case, I didn't tokenize myself, but what I did was I tokenized my NFT collection, right? Didn't sell it, gave it away for free. But, you know, it revolves around that tokenization of a certain aspect of an individual or a community, and then after that, distributing that value.
Yeah, what I love about social tokens is that it's really up to the creator to figure out what they want to do with it. And, you know, in your case, it was backed by the NFTs, which is a great idea. And then in Coin Artist, she's implementing the tokens in future gameplay. And that's what I love about it is the unlimited optionality that people have. And I almost see it as kind of the future of influencers. When they're able to tokenize their communities, they're able to do who knows what. And we're going to see these crazy use cases that today we can't even think about, right? So one analogy I like to use is that back in the early 1990s, when we were just getting on the internet, you know, we had AOL and it was very slow and you could really just use email. It's like, we couldn't imagine Uber and Airbnb and stuff like that, because I was just so internet native that we couldn't even like think of that, right? And then now it's like, oh, of course that exists, right? And so I feel like social tokens and crypto in general are going to go through that kind of same revolution where we can't even fathom what social tokens will be used, you know, 5-10 years from now.
Absolutely. I mean, but even besides the social token space that you and I are talking about, on the other side, you have social token OGs such as Connie Digital and Hackatao and Yura Miron and Skinny, right? And so basically what they're doing is they use social tokens as a loyalty point system. Buy my art, receive some of my social tokens such as Skull or such as Hue or such as Mork. And then after that, I'm going to release certain pieces that will exclusively only be available for Mork or for Hue or for Skull. I think the possibilities are limitless.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's incentivizing certain behavior and also giving the collector skin in the game. So you're much more motivated to be like, hey, you know, go Connie, you know, keep making awesome stuff, etc. So that's really cool.
I mean, one of the most interesting things that we saw is that we did a partnership for the Hackatao and Mork. So right now, the Hackatao Discord community exists in the Whale Discord under our Whale Communities brand. And what we saw is that, you know, while people were buying Hackatao pieces in order to earn Mork, people were actually buying Mork directly on Uniswap simply because they wanted to have a shot at those exclusive pieces that were coming up. So I think it's fascinating. And once again, can you think about in the future, you know, you have YouTube personalities, you have TikTok personalities who say, hey, gain exclusive content to my secret TikTok videos or secret YouTube videos. But the only way that you're going to be able to do that is if you hold a certain amount of my social currency, right?
Yeah, it's going to be absolutely incredible. So that actually goes great to my next question, which is, in the future of social tokens, is going to be millions and millions of people that have their own tokens? Or will it kind of continue to be this kind of smallish group of influencers?
I think it's going to be a two-step process. The barrier to entry to create a social token is extremely low, right? I mean, you can do it through Roll, or if you have the technical chops, you can just create your own ERC-20 token. However, I think the market is going to go through a expansion and then consolidation dynamic. Right now, it's very easy to create a social token, but it's very hard for a social token to retain and increase in value. I think you've seen that if you go through some of the social token charts, you'll see that a lot of tokens struggle at 2 cents, 3 cents, 4 cents. And then in addition to that, it's very often extremely difficult for them to form a community around a social token. So I believe what we're going to see is we're going to see a lot of people develop their own social token. They are going to try to get their community on board onto their social token or develop communities around that social token. But at the end of the day, as they find that managing a social token is more multidisciplinary than they think, I think you're going to see them adopt other social tokens as their social token, if that makes any sense. So let me give you an example. Maybe what you have is you have a group of some very influential YouTubers who originally had each of their own social tokens, right? So let's say you had 5 YouTubers, they each created their own social token, but they found it was very difficult to create value by themselves. What you're going to see is that maybe for one specific genre in YouTube, maybe let's say it's a tech genre, they'll develop the tech token, and that will be used collectively over 5 or 6 different YouTubers within that community.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's shocking to see already the ecosystem that is built up around social tokens, because at least for me, I feel like they're very new. And you see already there is a social token incubator It's done by a guy named Jess Sloss, I believe. Sorry if I got his name wrong. And then also, it's funny, I know his Twitter handle, Koopa Troopa. I think his name is Cooper. Yeah, Cooper Turley, I believe. Yeah, so anyways, he's a social token agent, I guess. He kind of interfaces with everyone and helps them manage their social tokens, which is really, really interesting. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it's very easy for people to make and much more difficult for people to kind of manage and kind of handle. So I think we will see an ecosystem of infrastructure built out to help these creators manage and make their social token more valuable over time. So speaking of that, how did you make Whale become the most valuable social token ever?
So, you know, while I'd love to take all the credit, 99% of it is due to my team and the community. My contributions to the Whale project have been firstly, I mean, coming up with the original concept. But even in doing that, I had a lot of help from Roll, from Non-Fungible, from Jim McNellis, from Ikaitza, and all of these people that were advising me as I started developing this concept. So I think, you know, my first contribution was making sure that I had a strong concept to begin with. The second thing that I believe that I did right was partnering with the right people to manage the community on a day-to-day basis. I cannot say enough good things about the team that we have in place over at Team Whale. Today, we have about 10 people who they're either moderators, junior moderators, or what we call Whale advocates. And they pretty much manage the day-to-day for community management, as well as event management, event creation, marketing, all of these extremely important items. And, you know, just creating that core, very good team, they've just attracted even more people with that same mentality into the team. So, you know, law of attrition, as long as you build a very good, solid core team, they'll continue to attract members that share the same sort of mentality. And then the third thing is just being very open-minded, right? When you and I first spoke in May of this year, the main and core value proposition of Whale was the vault. And I know we'll get to talking about the value proposition of Whale later on today, but you know, just keeping that open mind and seeing different things that worked or failed with other projects and be willing to incorporate it into your own project, adapting it so that it works with your different mechanisms. I think that part of open-mindedness has really helped the project grow very quickly. You know, going back to the original question in terms of why will tokens eventually consolidate rather than continue to expand, a lot of people, when they do launch social tokens, I think, again, the barrier to entry is very low, right? All you have to do is create an ERC-20. However, the management of the tokenomics as well as the community really requires a multidisciplinary expertise in economics, monetary policy, game theory, marketing, community management, among other things. So, you know, I think it was all of those four things put together. The first one is, again, the concept was good. The team is excellent. You know, keeping an open mind and willingness to incorporate ideas. And then after that, lastly, having a multidisciplinary skill set. Those were the real things that helped drive the value of Whale today.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's like if you look at all projects that are successful, whether they be businesses or whatnot, you basically start off with a good idea and someone who kind of, you know, leads the way. But then it's not just themselves. Usually they have a great team that surrounds that person. And so you have that kind of driving force, the idea, and then you have the incredible motivated team that really pushes it to the next level. So it seems like that's exactly what has happened with Whale Token. So you mentioned having an open mind, which I think is really important at this stage of the game because it is just so early. And I was reading up on your Scent blog a little bit, and you wrote about kind of the social token valuation framework that you had. It was called the Theoretical Model for Social Currency Evaluation. And I'd love to learn more about that because I was looking at it and I thought it was really interesting because you have some people that are kind of utility maximalists, which say, okay, the only thing that drives value to anything really is utility, right? So if your token is not being used day in and day out, then it should be worth zero, right? And you have people on the other side, we say, no, like narrative and actually social dynamics drive a lot of value to things, not just currencies, but things in general. And so I'm personally in the camp of more narrative, but I'd love to hear kind of how you came up with this framework and kind of just generally about it.
Absolutely. So just some background behind this article. I mean, as an investor, ever since I started touching the stock market, I've always been a fundamentals guy, right? I've been the fundamentals guy. I've been the price to book ratios guy. If the price to book ratio is above one, it's not a good deal. You know, a real maximalist when it comes to fundamentals and pricing. So before I launched Whale, honest to God, I had no idea what the valuation was going to be. The monthly valuation done by nonfungible.com is totally independent. Whatever you see is what I see. So, you know, you'll see that article was actually written prior to the launch of Whale. before I talk about the article, let me ask you a question. Why is Bitcoin worth $10,700 today?
Exactly, right? Like, I was similar to you where, okay, a company has to create a widget and this widget has to be widely used and so on and so forth. But then, you know, when I discovered Bitcoin, it really kind of changed that whole dynamic of, okay, actually what drives value to things, you know, Bitcoin, gold, is other people and whether or not other people think it's valuable, right? So the whole kind of social dynamic comes into play.
Exactly. So, you know, once again, the SCEM article was actually my attempt at understanding or at least explaining what is the value proposition of any social token in the market. I might not be the price to book ratio guy anymore, but I am the value proposition guy still. So basically in the framework that I put forth in that sent article, it was trying to say, hey, so if you have a token that's worth $3, is it possible to numerically quantify what each dollar is going to each aspect of the token? So for example, if I dissect whale, and we're going to be having a whale town hall this Sunday, and I'll be talking about that valuation and that value proposition, because it's a question also that the community has been asking. When it comes to whale, basically you're looking at several layers of value. The first layer of value that you're looking at is obviously what we started off with, which is the vault. You know, the vault today valued by nonfungible.com is about $1 million. You know, nonfungible.com, they're growing their valuation strategies and mechanisms. I think it's very conservative. But at the end of the day, we can very surely say based on nonfungible.com, $1 million of this market capital is based on the vault. Then after that, you have all this additional value and what's really driving that. Having gone into a deeper thought process, I think there are several layers. So the first one is the asset backing it. The second thing is the brand, right? In any other industry, I mean, you talk about the Kardashians, you talk about Kylie Jenner, you know, why are their brands worth something and how much are they worth? In terms of whale, I think we have two brands that we're looking at here. So you're looking at the Whale Shark brand, which comes across as a savvy investor. And then after that, you're looking at the whale community, which is the really one of the most vibrant NFT communities in NFT land. So you're looking at the growth and development of those two brands. In addition to that, you have the community. So you're looking at community size, what's the community engagement, how are they interacting with the total ecosystem as a whole, and what is the consensus of the value of this token based on that community since they are the main users of it. So that's the third layer of value. The fourth layer of value that we're looking at is industry leadership, essentially doing things like what we have is what we have Whale FM. With Whale FM, you have Alegria and the team. They're interviewing artists, they're interviewing NFT creators, they're interviewing people within the space, creating a knowledge base and a center of expertise that other people can learn from. You know, how much is that worth? And then after that, the last layer is the more tokenomics layer, right? So, you know, if I do hold the whale coin, what am I able to do with it to drive further growth or further incentive? And we have things like liquidity mining and things like hold to play roles, as well as what we have. We recently developed Whale Tank, which is, again, a venture capital arm of Whale that will continue to drive financial value as it continues to grow larger. So I think when you're looking at the valuation of any social token, you need to be looking at the value proposition that it provides. And the value proposition structure that I've come up with so far has been, number one, is it backed by any assets? Number two, does it have a viable brand or does it have viable branding? Number three, does it have a strong community? Does it have a strong community consensus? Number four, is that brand or is that community showing industry leadership? And then after that, number five, what are the tokenomics and the mechanisms for return on investment?
So if you had a utility maximalist that was, you know, standing in front of you and saying, okay, tell me what is the utility behind the whale token today? What could you tell them? And also for myself, I'd love to know, what are you thinking about the utility of the whale token in the future?
Gotcha. So I think, you know, again, so when we had our first discussion, the main utility behind the whale token was to be a store of value, right? Because the whale token was backed by the vault, it would have a tangible store of value that would appreciate over time as the value of the NFTs in the vault continue to escalate. So I think the first one still remains the same. It's a store of value. The second use case that has cropped up, it's become a medium of exchange, right? So if you go onto OpenSea today and you click on Whale, you will see people selling their artwork and NFTs or creations or collectibles for Whale. And that was really one of the pushes that we made in the beginning to say, hey, we have this token, it has a good store of value. Now, why don't you earn it by selling your stuff in Whale? And I think that medium of exchange concept can be broken down into two sectors. So number one, you can buy this either for whale or for ETH. I'm agnostic to whether you give me ETH or whale. And then on the second side of a medium of transaction, you actually have things that are only for sale for whale. So recently what we did was we launched what we call NFT mining, where we have 10 extremely prominent artists in the crypto art space release art pieces that are only purchasable for whale, right? So again, that drives the demand for whale because you can only buy these masterpieces using whale. The third thing, you know, and I've struggled to put together a coherent way to say this, but it's almost a return on investment generator. We have things like liquidity mining, hold to play roles like whale and like dolphin. And just explaining those very quickly, with liquidity mining, if you add to our liquidity pool, we give you a share of 8,000 whale that every single month based on the percentage of liquidity that you're providing to the pool. And then after that, in terms of hold to play roles, as long as you keep 600 whale in your MetaMask account, you get a whale roll and you get dropped a total of 5,500 whale that is split among all other whales every single month as well. And that's the same thing with dolphin, right? So the dolphin roll, basically you just need to hold 12 whale. Then after that, what you're able to do is be able to participate in all of our events to earn more whale. So I think those are the three core use cases that have appeared so far. So number one, a store of value. Number two, a medium of exchange. And number three, a return on investment generator. And the fourth thing that has really been surprising to me, it's really become more, emotionally speaking, a badge of honor, right? So when you go into the whale server, people are proud that they own whale, right? They're a whale because they own whale. So I think beyond those more utilitarian use cases of whale, there's also a very strong emotional proposition that's actually occurring.
I love that. That's definitely a point that I never really think about, but the psychological aspect of even naming it whale is genius because of course everyone wants to be a whale, right? So if you hold your whale tokens and then they go up as much as they have, then you have probably become a whale. So
Andrew, that's great. Maybe it'll reach one day where you're not really a whale unless you're holding some whale, right? That psychological aspect, and you know, one day maybe OpenSea will allow me to put a whale badge next to accounts that are actually holding whale in their account, right?
It'd be really cool. Yeah. Okay. So speaking of that, what is kind of, if you could just snap your fingers and make all the utility and functionality into the whale ecosystem that you'd want, what would that look like?
Ooh, that's a difficult question. So honestly, if I had to snap my fingers and I wanted some form of utility to appear immediately in the whale community, it would be the instant maturity of the DAO, if I'm very honest with you. The whale DAO has been something that we've been trying to implement for a very long time now. I think DAO technology is growing along with DeFi, growing along with NFTs. But you know, based on my exploration of the systems, it's not prime time ready yet. There's no real plug and play solutions as we see it today. So, you know, if I had to snap my fingers and if I could ask for one thing to be implemented, it would actually be, you know, a comprehensive whale DAO whereby people could not only stake their whale to be able to get voting rights, but would also be able to vote. And that flow from the voting to the complete automation of the results and execution of those results. You know, I'd probably die for that today.
So yeah, I'd love to hear what, in your mind, would users be able to vote on through the whale DAO?
Everything, Andrew. At the end of the day, my role as a founder is not always to be leading the community through execution. I'd rather the community be leading themselves. And, you know, I'll always be here to provide advice, to provide support and encouragement. But the ultimate goal of the whale DAO is for them to manage everything. I think the first aspect that the whale DAO needs to be managing is the community. So who are your mods? Who are your advocates? The community needs to be able to vote on those, right? So that, you know, we can reward those who are doing a good job and we can replace those who are not. So community is one of them, you know, and that not only pertains to leadership, that also pertains to members, right? The second aspect that it needs to manage is the whale budget. We give out a total of 50,000 whale, which today is worth over $500,000 every single month. Now, what does that budget look like? How much should be going to salaries? How much should be going to whale grants? How much should be going to liquidity mining? I think that's something that the whale DAO needs to be managing. The third thing that it needs to manage is the sale of NFTs. So to date, I have never sold a single NFT. I'm waiting for the whale DAO to come into place so that I won't be the one making that decision. The community will be saying, hey, I think it's time that this NFT is worth this much. We have an offer of this much. I think we need to take it. So that's the third aspect of the whale DAO that needs to occur. And that last aspect is saying, hey, now that I've sold the NFT, for cryptocurrency or for whale, what am I going to do with that? What am I going to do with those funds? Am I going to take them and put them into whale tanks so that we can invest in a up and coming company or investment opportunity? Are we going to take this ether and then after, are we going to buy another NFT from Pak or from Hackatao so that we can continue to increase in value? At the end of the day, my dream is that the entire whale community, whale token, 360 degrees is managed by the community.
That's awesome. So will people be able to acquire the NFTs in the vault with whale? Will the NFTs be redeemable for whale?
Absolutely. Some of them actually are today already. Again, I put some prohibitively high prices on them because, again, I'm still waiting for that DAO to occur. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it has always been one of the benefits of holding whale to be able to buy something from the vault with whale. Once the DAO is fully functional, the DAO will be able to say, hey, I think we need to put these certain NFTs on sale for whale. And then people holding whale would be more than welcome to purchase them.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so throughout this entire journey, this process, what has been your biggest surprise?
Oh, so many surprises. I think it's been how fast we've grown. Honestly speaking, when we started, I think we started off at about, we really stabilized about 20 to 30 cents, which in a fully diluted market capital was about $3 million. And, you know, I was very happy with that growth and I was very happy with the growth of the community. Over the last 2 months, you've seen that value go from 30 cents all the way to a high of $14. And granted that we've retraced a tiny bit since then, I didn't envision that I would find so many wonderful community members who held the same concepts of investing and, you know, just basic business ethics. Today, I think the Discord is where I think we're probably somewhere about 1,995 members. So we're encroaching on 2,000. We have some amazing events like Whale Poker. We have a weekly night poker event that happened yesterday. We topped out at 101 people participating in a friendly poker event. I'm just so surprised and humbled and just honored that the whale community has grown so quickly.
I love that. All right. So in your opinion, what have you done well with whale and what do you wish you could have done better?
I think the best thing that we've done with whale is that we've kept an open mind and we've been flexible and we've grown quickly, right? So in development of whale, we only had one single idea, which was saying, hey, we're going to develop a social token that was backed by NFTs. When I look back over the last 2 months, you know, and think about the value proposition, it's no longer just being about the NFTs, right? It's forming this huge, amazing community. It's creating all of these events that draw hundreds of people in. It's been creating all of these mechanisms that have allowed people to derive a passive income. So I think those, you know, just keeping an open mind and adding and continuing to evolve whale with the times, I think that's something that we've done very well. What I wish I could have done better, I think, so the first thing is, you know, and it's hard to say this, but, you know, if we had had all these ideas when we started, I think we would also be in a much mature state at the moment. But, you know, once again, you learn and you grow. The other thing that I might have done better is, you know, we were of the philosophy when we started that the more people who had whale, the more people we were going to be able to convert or the more people were going to use whale. You know, what we found through that just simple mass airdrop within the Discord, it really stunted growth in the first 1 to 2 months. I've heard stories about people selling whale for shitcoins and then after that losing all their money in shitcoins. I heard another story about someone selling their whale for gas money. And, you know, that whale that they received, I think on average, everyone received about 200 whale, which is about $2,000 today. Could have been so much more. So I think the other thing that we could have done a lot better in the beginning is making sure that whale went to the right people with the right strong hands.
That makes a lot of sense. All right, so where would you like to see whale in the next 3 years?
I'd like to see whale become, from a community perspective, I'd like to see whale become one of the top 10 leading communities, not only in NFTs, but in the crypto space itself. And, you know, in doing so, grow the different arms and functions that we have within the whale community, such as Whale FM and Whale Tank. With our growth trajectory as we're experiencing now, I don't think that that is too far off. In addition to that, from a whale valuation, I'd love to see whale break the top 100 cryptocurrency coins, right? At the high point, you know, we're right now trending between 170 to 193. We really only have about 93 places to go. It will only happen when the community and what we do, you know, are really valued and are truly reflected in that value.
I love that. All right, I want to switch gears here a little bit, and I want to talk about kind of the NFT market in general. And, you know, I kind of categorize the NFT market into collectibles, game assets, virtual worlds, crypto art, etc. Could you tell me which of the NFT categories is your favorite and why?
That's an extremely difficult question. You know, right now we're seeing a boom in digital land, right? I think with CryptoVoxels and DCL have always done well, and the recent growth in Sandbox has really lit a fire in the digital land as we see it, the metaverse. I think it is a very tight race between digital land and digital art. And then let me explain why. So let me talk about digital art. I mean, the first thing is that, again, digital art is worth something, and there is only one way to prove provenance and scarcity with digital art, and that is through NFT technology. The tokenization of art is just the natural commercialization of digital art, and it's not something that might happen. It has to happen if digital art is eventually going to be worth anything. So that's one of the main reasons why I'm a very strong stickler behind digital art. The other thing is that, you know, unlike games and unlike platforms, digital art is eternal, right? You know, just because a certain Picasso piece was being shown in Singapore and then after that moved to, let's say, Europe, it changed platforms, but it's still worth more due to the growth over time. So the change in platforms or the change in technology is not really going to affect the value of digital art. So that's why I'm very, very bullish on digital art. On digital lands, I mean, I think everyone can see it, right? With the growth of COVID and the unfortunate inability for us to get past it for the time being, you know, people are spending more and more time in front of their computers at home and in a very limited physical space. The metaverse, it really frees up a lot of people. And, you know, I think, again, not space as a concept, digital art will allow people to experience a different type of freedom that is more akin to pre-COVID than what we're all experiencing right now. You know, in addition to that, I mean, with the growth of digital art and digital collectibles, there needs to be some place to be able to display that art and those pieces. And, you know, besides the use of AR inside your living room, which no one else can see, the only other place to be able to display digital collectibles and digital art is in the metaverse itself, right? So I think, again, those two have to be my favorites. There's a strong case for both of them. I think it's just the beginning for both of those as well. And, you know, without a doubt, both digital art and digital land are going to escalate in value over time.
I like that a lot. It's kind of like a place to be and then something to do and a way to experience some culture while you're in that place. So it kind of hits upon the two important aspects of life in general. So that's really cool.
Exactly.
All right, let's jump into the closing questions. If you could snap your fingers and enable some part of the crypto ecosystem to go mainstream, what would it be? And this means like everyone suddenly has a crypto wallet in their phone, or everyone has easy access to fiat gateways, or, you know, what in your mind would you enable?
I think for me, I mean, having been in cryptocurrencies, having been in DeFi, having been in social tokens, and having been in NFTs today, the one thing that I would have if I could snap my fingers is that all of my digital collectibles were easily accessible wherever I went on any device that I was using. So let me give you an example. I mean, today, if I wanted to show someone my digital art, I'd have to log on into OpenSea, and then after that, I'd have to show them this. And then after that, you know, if I wanted to show them some of my NFTs that are locked up in a different platform, I have some assets that are locked up in closed platforms, I'd have to open up that platform, and then after I'd show them that. I'd love to see the ability to truly carry, show, and collect digital collectibles anywhere without having that layer of cryptocurrency payments or NFT technology on the front side, right? So, you know, you see it in my profile. I'm a use case maximalist, which is the reason why I've so heavily invested in NFTs. I think at a point in time where we're able to have just seamless integration of the buying, collecting, and showing of NFTs, it's going to be a killer application for blockchain.
I love that. All right, so this is a big one. Do you have any views on the metaverse? And do you think in the future people will be spending most of their time in a virtual environment? Or do you think it'll be kind of a niche?
It has to grow. I think there are so many trends that are showing that the metaverse is a necessity. You're not only just talking about the growth of crypto-based metaverses such as CryptoVoxels, DCL, Sandbox. If you even look in the mainstream, the growth of VR is an obvious indication that people want to move to a digital space, right? Owning an Oculus Quest myself, I'm a huge proponent of virtual reality and virtual reality world. And I can truly see that when that technology has been refined on VR, that true immersive experience, that's going to revolutionize the way that we spend our time and the physical spaces that we occupy. But on the other side, you know, just being on CryptoVoxels, we weren't meant to look at art on a web page, right? I mean, today, if you go onto any of the platforms, Known Origins, Super Rare, Maker's Place, basically what you have is you have art on a web page. Art is meant to be on a wall, right? Art is best seen in a 3D environment. So, you know, with the growth of Sandbox and with the constant improvements that CryptoVoxels are experiencing, we're really able to take art and put it into its natural environment. Andrew, I mean, between you, me, and your listeners, what I've been thinking recently about Whale NFT mining is because we're selling all of these pieces of artwork, how about skipping the website altogether and using the metaverse as the actual store so that, you know, we're not looking at art on a web page in 2D, but we're actually looking at it in its natural environment.
Yeah, I absolutely love that concept. I was thinking about, if you know NoShot, he has a clothing brand in CryptoVoxels called Nowhere. Really beautiful storefront in CryptoVoxels and sells all this stuff as NFTs. And I can't wait for the day when there's like a big drop of virtual clothing and you have avatars lined up outside the storefront waiting to get in, like waiting for the drop. And it's kind of like, I just can't wait for us to have something like that where people are waiting in line in this virtual world, talking to each other, becoming friends, just, you know, just chatting about whatever. And then the doors open and everyone rushes in, right? Like, I think that to me is like, that means that we've made it and we haven't got there yet, but I can see it happening in hopefully the next year or two. So I'm very excited for that future.
Andrew, there are so many aspects of the metaverse that are going to grow in the future. We've talked so much about NFT collectibles and art pieces, which are, you know, meant to display, right? So they're meant for the aesthetic. Moving on to the more utility side, I read an article, I believe that either you tweeted it or many of you guys tweeted it, on Gucci talking about the dropping of Gucci branded wearables in certain virtual reality environments, right? Or metaverse environments. Who is that brand that is going to be the Gucci of the metaverse? I can tell you that it's a problem that I'm working on with several partners at the moment, right?
Ooh, that's cool.
Ooh, right. Interesting information drop. So yes.
Can you talk more about that? Or is that still?
I'd be glad to. So one of the stealth startups that I'm launching pretty soon is the world's first luxury gaming apparel brand. It's developed, designed, created in Korea. We will be launching in the middle of October. Honestly, everything has been created. Everything has been manufactured. It's really built apparel from the ground up. And then after that, with a focus on the gaming lifestyle, right? Not only from an aesthetic perspective, but also from a functionality perspective. Now, what we're going to be doing is we partnered with Voxel Architects, and we're going to be working with them in transitioning those apparel into the metaverse, but saying, hey, a hoodie might be just a hoodie in real life. What would I do with a hoodie in the metaverse, right? So we have some, I'll have to keep those a secret, but I have the full intention with my partners to try tackle that problem of who is going to be the Gucci of the metaverse.
That is really cool. That is so cool.
Thank you.
It's funny. I think that the space for the clothing and kind of avatars is right now obviously a very, very tiny space, but I see it as potentially going to be larger than the physical clothing universe. And I'm talking, you know, this is like 50 years in the future, but I can definitely see, because in real life, you want to display your personality and you want to kind of show how you are in some ways. A lot of people do that by wearing different branded clothing. You especially want to do that in a virtual environment where, you know, one day you could be a dinosaur and the next day you could be a human or stuff like that. So I see that space, I guess, personality related clothing, all digital, right? I see that as going to be an absolutely massive marketplace, but that's so interesting that you're pursuing that. I can't wait to see it.
Andrew, it's a necessity. I mean, okay, so if we all believe that the metaverse is inevitable, right? So whether that's today, tomorrow, 2 years from now, 5 years from now, if it's inevitable, there is no way that if I'm spending a bulk of time in all of these metaverses that I'm going to run around naked, right? I'm going to want to express myself somehow. You know, very much like the way that people express themselves with their regular apparel, right? So
totally.
People are going to express themselves through apparel. People are going to express themselves through their vehicles, right? Have you seen some of those cars that a lot of money has created for CryptoVoxels?
Yeah, I've seen his, they're kind of the floating cars, right?
Correct.
I've seen Alejandro's cars, which are incredible. Yep. And I think a lot of money has more floating style cars.
Correct. I think the key to success for the metaverse is saying, okay, I can draw a parallel between what people need in the metaverse from what people have need in real life. But instead of just replicating it across, how do I enhance that effect in the metaverse? I think that's something that people need to keep in mind, because very similar to when I see buildings in CryptoVoxels, right? Why do you need a chair when nobody sits in the metaverse, right? And sorry, I might be very opinionated on this, but a chair or a table is a waste of space because you're not going to be sitting down at a dining table in a metaverse unless it's just for aesthetic sake. How do you optimize the space within architecture for creations in the metaverse? All of these things are questions and challenges that people are going to need to tackle as we transition from the physical space to the digital space.
Love that. I completely agree. All right, last question. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the world of social currencies in 3 years?
I think we are just beginning. Honestly, Andrew, I think we are just beginning. In 3 years, I will still think that we're going to be on the expansion route. I think what we will see over the next 14 months is we're not only going to see an increase in regular people creating their own social tokens, I think we're also going to see a large amount of celebrities and semi-celebrities enter the token space. I think it will take about 3 to 5 years for that expansion to finally become consolidation. But I think it's inevitable that the social token space is eventually going to grow to some point of saturation.
Love that. All right, Willow Shark, this has been, again, just an absolute pleasure. I love speaking with you. And today we hit it all. We were talking about social tokens. We were talking about NFTs. We were talking about the metaverse. There's so many different topics. And I, of course, love that. But if people want to, you know, find out more about yourself and learn more about Whale, where should they go and what should they do?
Thank you. Once again, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you again, Andrew. We got to do this more often. If anyone does want to find more about Whale, what they can do is they can join our Discord. Our address is Discord. So discord.gg/whale. If they just entered the Discord, we have an extremely talented, extremely helpful community. I think they'll find themselves very welcome and very happy there.
Awesome. Well, Whale Shark, thank you again so much. And I'm already looking forward to podcast number 3.
Thank you so much, Andrew. You have a good one.
You too. Hey, everyone. Stay tuned for more episodes of the ZemaRed podcast and subscribe to the ZemaRed newsletter for more info on all things NFTs. Thanks so much for listening.